Welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Georgina Godwin. On this week's book review, I'm joined by the writer, critic and author of bestseller The Last Act of Love, Kathy Rensenbrig. Well, together we'll be discussing three recent releases, memoirs by the writers Howard Connell and Clover Stroud, and the latest novel by Boy in the Striped Pyjamas writer John Boyne. Kathy, welcome to the show.
Hi.
Our first book today is Fathers and Sons. This is the memoir by Howard Connell. It reflects on his relationships with his mother, friends, lovers, his father who left him as a child, but most importantly, with his daughter who becomes his son. Kathy, how do these relationships define Connell's life?
Well, and this is a beautiful book. It's very short, and which I always think is quite a good thing in books. It's very intense, and it's really layered. It's endlessly circling round this question of what it means to be a father, how the absence of a father becomes almost as important as a presence, and then how to be a father when you yourself have not been fathered. I found it sort of endlessly fascinating as a reading experience. It's kind of quite dizzying because you feel you're circling around this question, ever trying to find answers. Mm. And it's beautifully written. It's beautifully done.
What do you think it has to say about masculinity?
Well, lots. It doesn't come to a lot of answers, which again is no bad thing. I think it's an extremely relevant book, I feel, to our times. We talk a lot, don't we, about straight white men, and so they have everything their way. And I, possibly because I spend quite a lot of time in prisons, I always feel very well aware that there's an awful lot of straight white men that feel completely left behind and not heard by society.
Trump voters.
Well, quite. Yeah. But also, it's just so binary, isn't it? I think I think there is a whole interesting area around the way that society doesn't encourage men to be allowed to have emotions, I think, above a certain age. And I think this book brings up sort of, if you imagine water with stuff in it, it doesn't necessarily make anything clearer, but it just brings up a lot of things of interest, I think.
Mm-hmm. Another thing of interest is that Connell is not the daughter's biological father. So it's a role he's chosen and had to learn.
Yes. And again, there is this sort of interesting mirroring between the fact that his father was no father to him, and then he has chosen to be a father to someone who has no biological call on him. And then he takes those responsibilities really seriously. There's a bit here which I just thought is wonderful. He's talking about the only thing he pretty much has of his father is a photograph that shows his father, Jason, who was kind of like a bit of a charismatic confidence trickster type person. And he's looking at this photograph and he says, "Always this thick absence. Something you can't afford to be without isn't there, but you don't know what it is because it's never been there." And I think that's so profound, isn't it? About people, when we have missing planks in us, sometimes the absence becomes more important than the presence. Mm. But unpicking all of that stuff is incredibly hard. Mm. I found it a fascinating book, and it is interesting to see a sort of angry man. I mean, violence simmers all the way through this book as well. It's often quite disturbing. And it's just so interesting, actually, to read a book written by a man who will sort of admit to this violence and this tension. Books, as well, are defining part, because they are so often his salvation, the ways in which he relates to the world.
Mm. And other writers, Hemingway's an influence?
Yes, absolutely. Lots of interesting stuff about reading and writing and responding to them, men and friendship and how to be a man, what being a man means. You get an awful lot for your money, I would say, with this book. 200 pages, and everyone is stunning with some interesting thing on.
Mm. So that's Fathers and Sons. It's by Howard Connell. It's out now and it's published by Picador. So next we have a second biographical book, The Wild Other, a memoir. It's written by the British writer and journalist Clover Stroud. It recounts her younger life after her mother's involved in a horrific life-changing accident. At the age of 16, Stroud set off on a journey to try and regain a sense of home, which took her all around the world. So, Kathy, tell us a little bit about where Clover ended up.
Well, she had a very happy childhood, the sort of childhood that she was used to hear about in the books that her mother read her, sort of pony clubs and gymkhanas and growing up in a big house in the country surrounded by interesting people and beautiful wildlife. And then this terrifying accident, her mother fell off a horse and then was in a coma and survived the coma but was very brain damaged and never really made any sort of meaningful recovery. And Clover initially obviously begs and prays and wants her mother to stay alive, and then gradually realises that actually what they have been denied is any kind of clarity. So she embarks on this period, and it's 22 years that her mother survives. She embarks on this 22-year period of not really knowing whether she has a mother or not. And that's one of the really interesting things about this book. Continually interwoven is this sense of Charlotte, her mother's non-life, as Clover is growing into her life, trying to grow into her life, always in the presence of the death of her mother, or the non-life of her mother. But everything that Clover does is just so full of energy. She goes off to work, she goes off to Ireland and learns how to deal horses and sort of roams around travellers' sites, taking drugs, but and all sorts of interesting stuff about how people that have horse-drawn carriages don't take as many drugs as other people because you have to kind of have it a bit together to look after the horses. I learned so much fascinating stuff in this novel. Then she goes to Texas and there's all sorts of fascinating, you know, she has a sort of Patsy Cline fantasy which she lives out, but most ranches don't want a girl to be, you know, to work on the horses, but she gets them to let her. Yeah. Wonderful expression, dude ranch, which means a ranch that is owned by a kind of just a rich person. It's sort of like a plaything rather than a real working ranch. She wins her spurs. Literally, she gets given a set of spurs because she can make it in Texas. And it's a riveting and engaging read, I think possibly partly because of the way the two strands of it weave together. Also includes brilliant lines like she has children, she loves giving birth, doesn't find it difficult at all. She says, "I would rather give birth than cook supper." She just thought it's wonderful. So it's a very, it's an extraordinarily lively book, to say that so much of it is kind of endlessly confronting this terrible situation of really not having any notion how she can be, how she's supposed to be, what she's supposed to think as she sort of circles around the presence of her mother.
Mm-hmm. Of course, it's not entirely dissimilar from your own book. You point that out in the review that you wrote in The Times.
Well, yes, I think what's interesting is that stories of coma used to belong really only on the fiction shelves, so from Sleeping Beauty onwards. And they're always it's always a plot point in thrillers. You know, when somebody's in a coma, it's quite exciting because it's, are they going to wake up and spill the beans? But of course, in real life, it's just utterly devastating, and it's not fun at all. But also it's not actually, it defies narrative, I think, in real life, which is of course interesting because it's always being used as a narrative device in fiction. But in real life it defies narrative when someone is suspended in time, not really alive but not quite dead, and it does have a corrosive effect on the people around that person. Mm-hmm. So but I think there are similarities with my book, but also there's this whole difference. And again, because she's so interesting, I did read it actually feeling quite inadequate. You know, I tell you, I never went to Texas. I just hung around in Yorkshire crying. So I sort of felt a bit like, oh, I wish I'd... But it's true, I wish I'd met her. I think one of the reasons why books like this are important, if that's okay to say, because it includes my own book, is that because this is quite a new thing, there wasn't anything to read. And I kind of felt like, oh, if I could have read this book when I was 19 and struggling with the fact that I felt guilty because I wanted to not sit by my brother's bed anymore, but I didn't know what else to do. And if I could have read Clover's book and rung her up and say, should we go on a trip together? You know, I think it's important that people will realise that they're not alone in finding this situation extremely, extraordinarily difficult to navigate.
Mm. So that's The Wild Other, a memoir by Clover Stroud. It's out now. It's published by Hodder & Stoughton. Let's move on to our final book now, and it is the latest by the Boy in the Striped Pyjamas author, John Boyne. It's called The Heart's Invisible Furies, and it follows the life of an Irish boy called Cyril. Tell us about our protagonist, Cyril.
Oh, this is just such a glorious book. I loved each and every page of it. Cyril Avery is not a real Avery, as his adoptive parents are always telling him. He was taken to them as a baby. But we learn that he's the narrator of the whole book, because the first part is about his mother, and it's about his mother getting kicked out of their small village in West Cork by the priest. And it's very interesting because he is at time, Cyril is unborn. He's in his mother's tummy and telling us the story because she told him later. That's another interesting thing that runs through the whole book, that various times he doesn't know who his mother was and they have near misses. But of course, as the reader, you always know they find each other. Because right from the beginning, you know that the bits of the story he's telling from before he was born, he learnt from his mother. But it's just joyous. It's also, I mean, a hard read in some ways because it's kind of the story of Ireland from 1945 on. But he wrote a novel called The History of Loneliness, which was a brilliant novel, but I found I rather sort of suffered under the weight of its sadness. Mm-hmm. It was so relentlessly sad. And it's always, I mean, I always think about what can the reader take almost. This has that same sort of willingness to squarely look at some of the terrible things about Ireland, especially the cruelty of the priests. There are some cruel and terrible things that happen in this book, but actually it's leavened with such light and such joy and so many jokes and just so much good fun that I always feel I would recommend it to anybody without worrying that they... I think everybody's life would be enriched by reading this book. It's just joyous, and it's just there's just so much fun in it. Cyril's adoptive mother Maud is a famous writer who does well. At one point she's an obscure writer and then she sort of becomes a bit famous, and she doesn't really like being a famous writer. There's bundles of funny stuff in it about the things that people say to her that I imagine he's on the receiving end of these sorts of things. So there's all sorts of funny stuff about that. And then there's a broad landscape. So we go from Ireland to Amsterdam, also across the Atlantic to New York. And I thought this bit was quite funny. So by this time, Cyril is grown up and he's working as a volunteer with people who have AIDS. And he goes to see one of the people he's volunteering with. So he introduces himself. I'm a volunteer at Mount Sinai, he says. The man says to him, "You're English," he asks, looking me up and down, apparently judging my fairly nondescript clothing. "No, Irish." "Even worse," he said, waving this away. "My aunt married an Irishman, a total bastard and a walking cliché, always drunk, always beating her up. The poor woman had 9 children by him over 8 years. There's something animalistic about that kind of behaviour, don't you think?" "Well, we're not all like that," I said. You know, it's just full of the to and the fro. Every page is a pleasure.
Yeah, and there's obviously wit in it.
Oh, it's so funny. It's just so funny. And it's the sort of thing that you could read, you could just read with a kind of a pen in one hand and endlessly underlining it and kind of wanting to press it on people and then say things like, "Have you got to that great joke about whatever it is yet?"
Yeah.
I just love it. I hope it does really well. And I really hope lots and lots and lots of people read it.
That's The Heart's Invisible Furies. Comes highly recommended, and it's by John Boyne. It's out now. It's published by Doubleday. So that brings us to the end of today's show. Thanks again to my guest, Kathy Rensenbrink. You've been listening to The Monocle Arts Review with me, Georgina Godwin. The show was produced by Holly Fisher. Join us again at the same time tomorrow for our film review. But for now, goodbye from me, and thanks for listening.